friends. It me, Bethany Rutter. I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
After a very long time, we're back.
It feels like a really long time, doesn't it?
We are back, better than ever, with a new episode of your fave books podcast, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what else you listen to. What page are you on? This week, we are taking a journey north. This episode we've decided to call Nordic Queer. Hopefully you'll understand why after the couple of books that we've chosen. I feel like they're titles that people might not have read before.
They are definitely not as kind of...
on the radar.
Yeah, like as Instagrammed and tweeted as much as I would maybe think.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's an exciting episode, because, you know, sometimes I feel like we end up talking about the stuff that would be on everyone's radar anyway. You know, like...
I agree, which is fun.
It's nice to, like, pick out something that...
Yeah. It's nice to be in the zeitgeist. But also, yeah, I feel like at least part of the point of our job is to alert people to stuff they might enjoy that they might not otherwise know about.
Stick a spotlight on something.
Yes. So, Alice, would you like to talk us through the first book that we're going to chat about today?
Why do I feel like we're talking like we're doing an infomercial?
We're just getting warmed up. We haven't recorded an episode for a really long time.
True. You're like a stranger to me now.
I saw you on Thursday. We did.
We went to Tyabs.
No, we went to Tyabs on Tuesday. Then on Thursday it was Valentine's Day and we went for a drink at the Heathcote and Star.
Oh, that is true. We had a Palentine's Day.
I've seen you 3 times this week, which is so good because, yeah, it was a long time.
Okay, book number one is a little book called Paradise Rot by Jenny...
Fall.
I realised then I always make sure I know how to pronounce people's names. And I felt like I was pushed off the iceberg. I wasn't ready. Jenny Fall, who is a musician. And this book was published in, like, 2009, I think, 2010.
In Norwegian.
Verso have published the first English translation. And basically, in a nutshell, it is about a Norwegian student who moves to a fictional British town for university.
I assume St. Andrews.
Interesting. Is St. Andrews coastal?
I don't know. It just felt like they mentioned a golf course.
I thought it was south. I was picturing like...
Maybe.
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Some fictionalised Scottish university town.
Anyway, she struggles massively to find somewhere to live and ends up accepting a room in like an old brewery with this like... woman who's slightly older than her, but still in her early 20s.
Yeah.
And this brewery is kind of very makeshift. It's not really been converted properly. So, like, the walls don't reach the ceiling. It's very kind of dilapidated. And she's very aware of every sound and every movement of her new roommate. What did you think of this book?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I thought it was really interesting. I did, however, read it under the unfortunate... knowledge of a comment you had made about it before I read it.
No, what did I say?
You said that you thought it was really good, but you felt like it was like a first draft.
Yeah.
Which, and that I feel like it is very accurate. Which I think is fine. I think, like...
I stand by my comment.
Yeah. I thought it had very interesting ideas, and it was really well written. I loved all of the, like, weird, gnarly, biological imagery. But yeah, it felt like there could have been an extra something that really sold it to me. I thought it was by all means good enough and I really enjoyed it and I would really recommend it, especially if you want something that's like short and satisfying.
Because it is very short, like it's what, less than
200 pages.
200 pages.
And the print
is
quite big.
Less than 150 pages and it's a fat print and every chapter is really short. And like as they inhabit this space together, there's a lot of sexual tension, obviously, but also, like, the space itself, like...
comes kind of alive.
Yeah, like, they have, like, mushrooms are blooming in the bathroom, and there's mould on every surface.
And they have loads of apples for some reason that are rotting.
Like, the flatmate, like, brings home this massive bag of disgusting apples, and is like, yeah, it's really great, we'll eat these for weeks to come. And they last, like, less than a week, and they're just moulding everywhere. What's her name? It's like...
So her name is Johanna, and the girl's name is Carol. Not Carol, for some reason, but C-A-R-R-A-L, which I didn't fully understand, because that's not a name.
Carol.
I thought at some point it was going to be, like, the main character realizes that she didn't know her like how the name was written or something, but no, that never happens. Because I thought her name was Carol, and she just was like imagining it wrong. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know. Yeah, so it's like Joe and Carol.
There's very few characters in this.
Because then there's the neighbour.
Called Pim.
Also a fun name to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I just kind of like the claustrophobia of it. I mean, I say I like it, it's also my idea of hell.
Yeah, what I liked about it was reading this thing that was essentially my idea of hell in a way that I found manageable.
It's like bite-sized hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just this, like, cold, awful, just kind of physically uncomfortable space that is covered in mushrooms and just mold, slime. And
yeah, just nothing. You wouldn't want any part of your skin to touch anything in that space.
And the way that you can hear everything. Like, not just you can hear someone, like, flushing the toilet, but you can hear the sound of someone taking off a jumper. Like, you can hear the sound of the fabric against their skin.
Fingernails scratching pubes.
Yeah, that's one. That's another one. And obviously that becomes really magnified, and there's, like, even a moment where she's like, I'm sure I could hear the milk in the fridge, like, from the buzz of the fridge. I could hear, like, the wave, the ripples on the top of the milk.
But then that's also why I expected it to go further than it did.
Yeah.
Like, in some ways it reminded me of The Vegetarian by Han Kang.
Which is obviously extremely extreme.
Yeah.
And amazing
also,
for that.
But The Vegetarian is very extreme. It goes far. But also, it's, like, still actually kind of rooted to the real world.
Yeah, yeah, it's very human.
Yeah. And, like, I think I expected this either to go more surreal or to have, like, a more kind of
gnarly physical implication.
Or just, like, a stronger physical, like, real world anchor. Whereas it definitely seemed to, like, just end quite unexpectedly. Kind of before
anything had really happened.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah, I really liked reading this book, and I recommended it to my friend and colleague, Greek Alex, and she said that she had been given it by two different people for her birthday. So clearly it is on people's radars, kind of, maybe.
I think because Jenny Fowle is a musician.
Yeah.
Like, she's not someone I've ever listened to, but like, I tweeted about it, and my cousin was like, oh shit, I didn't know that she wrote fiction.
Yeah. So there's clearly like people out there who will definitely dig it. I think it is good. But yeah, I really read it under this lens of, like, first draft. Or, like, there was something kind of unfinished about it. Which, I feel like if you hadn't said that, I wouldn't have been like, this is the best book ever. I wouldn't have known how to articulate what I found lacking about it. So at least I'm able to say, yes, I agree with you on that.
Then I do wonder, like, that must be one of the kind of strange things about being a writer and not selling in, like, a billion territories for your debut. Like, she's written other books since this.
Yeah.
Like, this was her first novel. So who knows? Like, maybe we will find out if Paradise Rot sells sufficiently. Who knows, like, how she develops as a prose writer. Like,
what maybe, she writes like now.
Yeah, like, maybe this is something that even she feels has a kind of sense of unfinishedness about it. Or, I don't know, maybe everything is kind of hitting the same level, same way.
Yeah. But yeah, I would definitely read other stuff by her, because I feel like she has good ideas and images in her noggin.
And I like the characters. I feel like character-wise it's quite well formed, considering it's 150 pages.
Yeah.
It's really just a plotting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I had no idea what direction it was going to go in when it started, because I try not to read, like, blurbs, and I'm one of those people that likes to go into a book without knowing any, like, as little as possible.
You're not a blurber.
Not a blurber. Which is very interesting, because I read a book recently where I was about three quarters of the way through and I was like, oh, not a lot is happening in this book. And then I read the blurb and it tells you something that happened, like a very big thing that happens relatively near the end.
No, why?
But it's weird, because I feel like that really affects how you read the book. And because I didn't know, I don't know, though, it was just this kind of weird relationship between, like, what a book promises and how and what it delivers. Whereas I feel most people who read that book would have read it knowing what happens and knowing that they did have something to kind of build up to, whereas I didn't know that. So reading it with that ignorance.
I don't know. I think if you're worried about being able to sell a book without revealing, if you feel like you have to reveal something that happens three quarters of the way through the book, like, maybe the book isn't pacey enough.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if you have to wait that long to get to something that's juicy enough that someone will buy the book for...
Which is, this is, like, this is, I'd be like, ooh, that sounds interesting.
I mean, it's a hard one, because, like, it makes me think of What I Loved, and it's not a spoiler to say that What I Loved...
By Siri Husvet.
Siri Husvet, yeah. It's not a spoiler to say that it ends up being heavily influenced by the Disco Bloodbath.
Michael Ehrlich, Party Monster, Moiders.
Yeah, the Moiders.
Moider.
Well, Moider. Singular. Yeah. Not plural. Like, that's not a spoiler, but that also doesn't come into effect until quite late on. But the book is split into thirds. So
and other
like
stuff
it's...
happens in What I Love.
Yeah,
that
like
is interesting
enough. There are massive gripping hooks from the beginning. Whereas if you're reading something and thinking, like, not a lot has happened, maybe you're enjoying the ride, but not much has happened.
And also the thing that happens near the end isn't alluded to in the text earlier. Like, it's not like you know anything. It's not just that you don't know that that specific thing is going to happen. You don't know anything is going to happen. I don't know why I started talking about that, but
because
I did.
You're saying you hadn't read the blurb of this.
Yeah. So I hadn't read the blurb of Paradise for Art. So from the beginning, I didn't know what direction it was going to go in. Obviously, I think the title, I think anything that has rot in the title is very evocative of something. But yeah, I wasn't sure how it was going to play out. And I liked that little road.
Yeah, I think for me, essentially, it does boil down to a will they, won't they? And if they do, how?
Yeah.
You know?
The stuff I liked was also her weird obsession with her flatmate reading a fake version of Twilight.
Yeah, it's called Moonlips.
Moonlips, yeah.
I actually kind of love fake books.
Yeah.
Like, fake trashy books in fiction is really fun.
I like fake art. You like fake trashy books.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would recommend this book. Would you recommend it?
Yeah, I would. I mean, it reminds me of lots of things, but it's also not quite like anything I've read before.
Yeah.
Like, reminds me of The Vegetarian. It reminds me of Peach by Emma Glass.
Which I haven't read.
Which is, again, like, it's a novella. It's kind of wild. It's very kind of creative stylistically. Also, is a little bit unsatisfying, if I'm really honest.
Unlike The Vegetarian.
Unlike The Vegetarian, which absolutely bangs. But this also kind of reminded, did it remind you of Eat My Heart Out?
Yeah, maybe.
There's something about, like, being in this, like, very kind of frantic space with a woman that you're simultaneously a stranger to and kind of in love with and also kind of frightened of.
Yeah.
You know, like,
right.
It just, same energy.
Yeah.
Different execution, but same kind of energy.
It's true. So, yeah, I, for all the kind of things that I have said about it that would lead you to believe I was not into it. I was actually very into it.
It's such a low-key commitment.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very short book. It's easy to smash through. I kind of, in a way, I wish the cover was the cover that they used for Crudo by Olivia Lang. Or something like that.
Do you know the story of this cover?
I don't. Tell me everything. Tell me a story. I'm going to take a sip of my Prosecco.
Have a little sip of Prosecco. The cover artist is Chloe Sheffey. And she has written a really interesting breakdown of how they ended up with this cover, which is a kind of upside down painting of a mushroom with butterflies, but it's very dark.
It's very dark.
Kind of trippy looking. But basically, the title of the article, I can't remember where it's published, but if you just Google Paradise Rot
cover artist, design, yeah,
you'll find it. But basically, she said she kind of described it as having to work backwards. And, like, they went through so many damn covers for this book and ended up right back where they started. Not the same painting, but a very similar kind of theme. But, yeah, they went through so many different ideas, and some of them I thought were amazing. I like this cover. I don't think it speaks to the people who I would expect to pick this book up, though.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I think it's a great cover, but if I saw a stack of them in a Waterstones, I wouldn't instantly think of the books that I have just compared it to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, like, disconcerting, it's not gross, it's not... I don't know,
there needs to be an apple with a bite taken out of it that looks like a vagina.
Yeah, basically. That's literally what it should be. Is that one of the discarded options?
No, that never came up.
I think you should be a cover designer.
You know what? If I had my time again.
Maybe I bloody would. So that was the first of the two books that we read for this week. The second book. This is a very cool book.
It's a cool book.
I love this book. Cool. Let me tell you about this book.
Tell me about this book.
Friends, this book is called Crimson by Niviaq Korneliussen. You want to know something interesting about this author?
Literally everything you know.
She's from Greenland.
It's true.
Like
she
that,
is.
I think that in its own right makes this book worth reading. Like, literally, can you name me another Greenlandic author?
I literally cannot.
Yeah, and like that's probably because we're like dumb babies. But also, I don't think that really happens.
I don't think there is that much from the Greenlandic oeuvre being translated and released in the UK.
So maybe it's not just because we're babies. So Crimson is the story of five different people living in the same city in Greenland who are friends or related or are dating. Like, they all have some kind of connection to either all of the others or one of the others.
Isn't the connection they all ended up at the same party?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. They pass through the same party on a fateful night for them. And, yeah. I loved it.
So, like, each, the book is split into fifths, and each fifth is from a different character's perspective.
And that, that contains, thing, you know, straight up normal prose, and text messages, and emails, and some weird stuff at the end with hashtags, which I don't fully understand, but that's fine. But yeah. In general, that is the vibe of Crimson. And they're all kind of young, like in their 20s.
It's very millennial, isn't it? Yeah. Like, they're all in their, like, mid-20s, young to mid-20s. They're all kind of dating, but are not necessarily dating the person they should be dating.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of looking around, but not necessarily prepared to, like, jump ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
to
like
commit in any meaningful way.
Yeah, there's like a lot of like sexual tension. There's a lot of tension about like direction and whether or not they're attending the right parties, doing the right jobs, making the right art, existing in the way that is right for them in that particular moment in time.
So yeah, how did you feel about this book?
I really enjoyed it. I feel like it's because it's written, as far as I can tell in my research, by a cis woman. I'm very interested to find and have not yet found a trans perspective on it.
Yeah, because there is one strand.
And I'm not sure for me if, like, the way that that happens, the way that it's, like, introduced, although I'm sure it's accurate for many people's experiences, I'm not sure if it was, like, the best telling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a little bit, it could be a little bit simplistic.
Yeah, that's how I kind of, that's what my interpretation was.
Yeah.
Although, actually, no, you know what, I'm saying that, and actually, I do have a trans friend who did read it on my recommendation, and they loved it.
Okay, cool. So maybe, you know.
But I haven't had the chance to, like, talk to them in depth about it yet.
If you listen to this podcast and you are trans, and you've read Crimson by Niviaq Korneliussen, let us know.
Yeah.
We're interested.
Genuinely very interested. Because apart from that, which I wasn't sure about whether or not it would land right, I still really enjoyed the book.
Me too. I thought this was so great. And I feel like...
Excuse me.
This is a book I would like if it was English or American. And so the fact that it was also... I also got to read about a place that I have literally no idea about made it even more interesting to me.
That's the thing that I felt with Crimson. And I wonder how much of it is down to the translation. I felt like language-wise, sometimes it was very simple. It was almost kind of naive in the way it's written. But for the world that these characters are in, it worked.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, like, a negative point for me.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that the two of the blurbs are friends of the pod.
Yes, they certainly are.
Sophie McIntosh, author of The Water Cure, and Charlene Taylor, author of Ponte, Two Good Eggs. Have given glowing recommendations for Crimson. And I feel like it does kind of fit quite neatly into the millennial literature world.
It does. Like, it gets compared to Sally Rooney on the back. And I think, like, we can expect basically any book
about youth culture.
Yeah, that's written about like millennials specifically. Millennials in their 20s is going to get compared to Sally Rooney.
Well, weirdly, one of the other recommendation is by Lailene Paul, who wrote The Bees, which I haven't read. She compared it to Trainspotting by Irvine Welsh.
Have you read Trainspotting?
No.
Me neither. Maybe we should do that.
Drugs episode.
Or an episode of books that are written in language that I worry I won't be able to follow.
Possible. It's possible.
But then I wonder if like Scottish Twitter has made me better prepared for Trainspotting.
Scottish Twitter is one of the best Twitters on Twitter, I think.
It's definitely a fun ride.
But I feel like my main vibe of this is like, I think it was a really good book and I am hyped to have read a Greenlandic book.
And also, like, again, it's what, less than 150, well, less than 200 pages.
Yeah.
Like, they are a really nice little companion, a little duo, you know?
Let's see how long it is. It's 174 pages. It's actually 175 pages. I just don't like looking at odd numbers, so... What? If I'm reading a book,
yeah,
I always have to finish reading it on an even numbered page, and I can't look at this side of the page until I start reading again.
You odd duck.
Yep. Or an even duck, if you will. But something I thought was really interesting about this book, and I would love to know if this was also the case, well, half of this is obviously not going to be the case in the Greenlandic version. It has a cast of characters.
Yeah.
I'd love to know if that's in the Greenlandic version. But it also has like a glossary in the back, which obviously will not be in the original version, I would assume.
Yes.
I like that it tells us what Carlsberg is.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case you've never had a beer. Yeah, I don't know, I thought that was very interesting.
So what I thought was interesting about the cast of characters, I'm not normally a fan of a cast of characters at the front of a book, because it instantly makes me think, ugh, God, is it going to be so hard to keep track?
Yeah.
Keep referring back. But then I think the fact that the cast of characters and the glossary is also because some of the characters are named after Greenlandic words that to do with gender.
Yeah.
And it is actually legitimately quite confusing. But in the spirit of keeping the original text as present as possible, they kind of have to use the same names to get the same meaning.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't work to translate names. And also that's kind of against...
the point.
The code of translation.
Yeah.
Is that you don't, like, change names for the sake of making them easier for the tongue of which the book is being translated into.
Also, I think it's also partly... I know that some of this book is about gender anyway, but as someone who is English and doesn't speak Greenlandic or anything like it, I wouldn't... I mean, one way that I distinguish between characters is by remembering if they're male, at least male or female. And with this book, you don't have that as much, because I don't know if Inuk is a male or female name or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was an interesting thing. But yeah, I think you're kind of right about the way that the translation can be quite naive.
I think that's the best word I can think of to describe it, because it's not...
They're young, but they're not that young.
Yeah, like it's an adult book. I don't mean naive to suggest that it feels young or younger than it should be. But there is just like a kind of, the writing style, I would, you know, it's quite earnest. There's a lot of like exclamation marks and...
Yeah.
There's just something about the writing style which feels very youthful. And that's why I lean on naive to describe it.
I think that's legit.
But again, I feel like for any book that's less than 200 pages, I can roll with it. If this book was 500 pages, I think that writing style would start to grate on me.
Yeah. And also, I just don't know how much it's to do with the translation or the original writing. And I don't feel like this is particularly transparent about who translated it either, so we can't really credit him.
It's not on the cover, is it?
Okay, so this is translated from the Danish... into English by someone who is not the author, but from the author's translation.
Yeah. But I still don't understand why that person isn't...
credited in any way.
Mentioned.
Yeah. To whomst would you recommend this? Oh, sorry, there it is, right on the... Translated by Anna Hallager.
Oh, Excellent. Good.
Sorry for ignoring you, Anna.
Still should be on the cover, though.
Yeah, I agree. To whom would you recommend this book?
I mean, I would recommend it to anyone who enjoys those kinds of lost millennial narratives.
Yeah.
So, pretty much, I think that's why I chose these two books. Why I thought they would sit well together is not just because of the Nordic aspect to them, but because I think they're very similar. They appeal to a similar kind of crowd. Like, they're queer, they're young and lost. Both books kind of have a similar kind of cast of characters, although they are completely different in tone.
Yeah.
And plot.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah, because it's like part going out and going to parties, but it's also part figuring out who you are.
But I feel like in Crimson, those characters, when they go out to parties, they are like at the front of the conga line, like ready to go. In Paradise Rot, the narrator is being basically dragged,
kicking and screaming, out of her weird ramshackle tin bedroom,
disgusting gob home.
Yeah.
And again, like, I also like that about them as books that kind of contrast, you know?
I feel like this was a good, they're a good pairing in terms of their similarities and their differences. Thank you, Alice.
You are welcome, Bethany.
I don't know to whom I would recommend Crimson, but I just feel like it's quite our demographic, but also was probably quite overlooked.
Well, I think it came out just before Christmas. And again, like, I haven't seen much fanfare about it.
Yeah.
Considering it's such a quick read.
Yeah. But maybe that's, I don't know. I feel like...
I think it's held back because it's hardback.
Yeah, do I want to pay $12.99 for a quick read? I don't know.
Fair.
Yeah, I don't know, man. No, and I don't think that's a real reason that it, that we haven't seen loads of chat about it.
No, because you know what? Women by Chloe Caldwell...
Tiny.
Read in a Day. It was also somewhere between $9.99 and $12.99. I think it's just that it's probably not in enough bookshops. It has an amazing cover. You have the back of a person, quite androgynous, wearing red, holding a cigarette, short dark hair, and in front of a curtain.
And like the tiny
face.
Oh,
and there's a little person whispering. I didn't see that.
There's a little person that they're talking to whose face you also cannot see and whose gender.
But I think this is an amazing cover.
Yeah.
I picked it up. I'd never heard of it. I was in one of my favourite branches of Waterstones, the one in Walthamstow. And it caught my eye on a table, and I picked it up completely with no idea what it was about. I'd never heard of it.
That's the power of bookshops, man. That's so good.
And the power of good cover design.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas I don't know if... I mean, if these were next to each other, if Crimson and Paradise Rot were next to each other, I feel like I like the physical book of Paradise Rot more because it's got these nice little... What are they called? Gatefold?
French flaps.
French flaps. I like the little French flap and I like a paperback much more than I like a hardback, but the cover of Crimson I think is much, much, much better. And I like the way that this is a bit like a sunrise on the back.
Back of the book, yeah. Yeah.
And that was something that Sophie McIntosh mentions in her little chat on the back, is the repercussions of finding yourself in a place where everybody knows everybody else. I thought that was one of the most interesting things about Crimson, was just like how wild it must be to live in a place that's so like... isolated and inward looking.
It's very like small town vibes.
Yeah.
But also it's not at all transient. Like everyone who's there has always been there and will always be there.
Yeah.
Whereas Paradise Rot is very transient.
Yeah, it's
everything
true.
Is constantly changing, rotting, blooming, people come and go, nothing really seems to stick.
The apple falls from the tree.
Oh.
Make you think.
Make you think.
So yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed reading these two because they are books that are very much for the likes of me, but had kind of passed me by. Like, I've had Paradise Rot for a while, but I hadn't got around to it because it's one of those books where I was like, I know when I read it, I'll like it, but I have no sense of urgency around it. Whereas Crimson, I think that could have passed me by forever. Named by The Guardian as one of the top 10 modern Nordic fiction books. Cool. Because I feel like a lot of what we understand of Nordic writing is... you know, crime.
Exactly. I think that's also why I was quite excited by it. And also excited by Paradise Rot, because I want to be reading more translated fiction.
Mm.
That is what I want to be doing. But I'm still, I don't necessarily want to compromise, like, my taste.
Yeah, what you would want to read anyway.
Yeah, I know what themes I'm interested in. And I think sometimes that's the real challenge, because those books are being written.
Yeah.
They exist. There's no excuse to only be reading books by the same, like, same types of writer that you've always read. It's just a matter of finding them.
So, yeah, I feel like if people are listening, whether you work in books or you just read books, who, I don't know, have some kind of insight into young lady fiction that is not written in English, then we would be very interested to hear about it.
Yes.
Would absolutely. We not?
Always.
You know what we like. If you're listening to this, you know what we like.
Give us recommendations.
Yeah. Because I feel like, yeah, we could do more of that. But I'm very happy with having effortlessly read two translated books for this week's episode.
Smashing it.
Yeah. What are you reading at the moment, my friend?
So I am like 10 pages to the end of a book called The Trauma Cleaner. Which
you're enjoying that, aren't you?
I am having the time of my life. It's a completely wild ride. It's non-fiction. It's a biography, but written by someone who is very close to the subject. The subject being a woman called Sandra Pankhurst, who has a trauma cleaning company. So she goes into the homes of people who have either died in tragic and messy circumstances, or the homes of living people who have mental illness or debilitating disabilities that mean that they're not able to keep up with the kind of upkeep of their homes. And also hoarders, which is like a whole different area entirely. And she's a trans woman, she's an ex-sex worker, she has had the most horrific childhood and has used all of this kind of pain and abuse and turmoil. Has made her this incredible kind of relatable, empathic person. So she's able to go into these really awful situations that are awful on multiple levels, emotionally and physically, and is able to just stroll in, always with these long fingernails tapping on her phone, and makes people feel at home, and is able to, like,
clean out their shit.
That shit, yeah. It's just amazing. It's not an easy read at all. It goes throughout Sandra's childhood and her tumultuous life and her various marriages, and it's heavy, but it's written with so much warmth, and she is such an incredible person. I love it. I cannot recommend it enough.
And you said there was also a good audiobook of it, apparently
yeah. Our pal Megan Nolan said that it has a great audiobook.
Cool. Okay, well, when my Audible credit drops this week, maybe I will use it on that.
Treat yourself. You'll love it.
So who is this published by? I don't feel like I know about this book.
Okay, so it's an Australian imprint, and they're called Text Publishing, which sounds like some kind of weird self-pub, but they are absolutely not. They're legit. But it's been distributed by Turnaround.
Okay.
So yeah, it's like quite a big flappy paperback.
Yeah, that was almost why I asked who published it, because I've seen your copy of it, and it looks unusual as a book.
And it's just been long-listed for the Wellcome Prize, the non-fiction prize. So
I will give this a go. Yeah, when my credit drops. I just started today reading Pachinko by Min Jin Lee.
Oh my god, that has been raved about.
Yes. I don't really know. I don't know what I want to say about it. I don't feel like it's something that I'm so... it appeals to me so much that I was like, I must read this book. But when I kept hearing about it, and then I found out that my agent represents the author, I was like, oh, slide me a copy. So she did. And I am really enjoying it. I'm about 80 pages in, and I started it today. It's one of those like sprawling, multi-generational.
See, that's what I love. You're 80 pages in, and I have seen that book, and 80 pages is like...
It's like 570-something pages. So I haven't made an enormous amount of progress today, but not like one of these that we talked about today, where that's like half the book. but yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's just not the kind of book that I read that often.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I know.
You know that kind of, like, multiple
it's
generational...
It's a, yeah, it's a true, like, family saga.
Yeah. Much like something like Do Not Say We Have Nothing.
Yeah.
Or even America Is Not the Heart, which we will read at some point.
Yes. It's on the horizon.
It is on the horizon. Because now that I have it on Kindle... Because that's another very long book.
Yeah, I have a very chunky hardback.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to read it.
But me too.
Very small hands.
It's hard to hold hardbacks. I'm anti-hardback, you know. I know they're nice, but I would just prefer not to.
Just prefer not. Fun fact, did you know that in Australia, hardbacks, books are so expensive that hardbacks just don't sell because they cost like £30.
What?
Yeah, so
who would?
Yeah, so in Australia, most books are released just in paperback because that's the only way that it's affordable. It's like good for them, but also like sort
bad.
That out.
Yeah, because I'm sure that even a paperback isn't going to be like affordable.
Yeah, so a paperback is like £20, which is just ludicrous.
Yeah, that's bad. Bad for them.
I want everyone to be paid fairly, but I want books to be accessible too.
Yes, agree. Yeah, and before Pachinko and before reading these, I read the book that I referenced in this episode with the thing that happens in the blurb and blah, 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 which is The Incendiaries by R.O. Kwon.
Ooh. I think you're going to have to tell me, like, off record.
Nah, that's fine. I'll say. If you're going to read The Incendiaries by R.O. Kwon, which has a very cool, bright cover, which is what drew my eye to it, either don't read the blurb or read it. I don't know.
And
just
on your head be it.
And on your head be it. Yeah. So yeah, that's my recent readings.
It just makes me think. I remember one time we were trying to come up with the title of an episode and I was like, oh, I have a great title, but I'm not sure if it's a spoiler. And you were like, well, then it can't be the title of the fucking episode.
Yeah.
I can't remember which episode, but that happened once.
I'm very anti-spoiler, which is why I don't read blurbs. But I just feel like if even the author has been like, yeah, that's fine, then what am I going to do, you know?
I mean, I always read the blurb at some point. I need to know what the book is about somehow.
The cover.
The cover, that's it, that'll be. Yeah.
What Twitter said. That's how I know, you know, I feel like I go a lot on, because most of the things I read are like personal recommendation. So all I need to know is that people enjoyed it, maybe a vague flavour of the vibe, but I don't really need to know what the plot is a lot of the time.
See, that's a big, like, point of contention on
BookTube, if you will.
If you will.
I will.
Is people, flapping between whether or not they should just read the blurb. And it really pisses me off when people just read the blurb. Not because I, like, desperately don't want to hear the blurb, but I watch a lot of BookTube. And so I don't want to see, like, every single BookTuber who I enjoy reading the same fucking blurb to me.
Yeah, because anyone can read a blurb. Like, there's a reason that when we start talking about a book, I'm not like, Alice, read the blurb. I'm like, can you tell me about this book? You know, because that it means telling me about the plot, but also telling me about the vibe.
Exactly. I want to know the vibe.
Yeah.
I basically want to know whether it's today or, like, back in the day. And I want to have, like,
here or somewhere else.
Yeah, here, somewhere else. And if it's, like, happy, sad, spicy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the Nando sauces.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I really need.
Is it mango and lime?
Yeah, or is it like the
10 chilies?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's legit. So yeah, we've done a lot of opinions already so far in this episode, which I feel is coming to a close.
Yeah, I think I'm done. I have nothing more to say to you.
It's so wild that like we've been gone for so long and after our like infomercial beginning, we're now back into the swing of things.
Yeah, back in the swing of it. Back on the horse.
Back on the old horse. I have loved being back on the horse. As you know, we don't read out adverts for mattresses and the like, but we would love for you to tell someone about this podcast, whether that means leaving a review on the old Apple Podcast app or whatever app you use if it has a review function, or just, you know, following us on the internet.
Subscribe
to it so that you get a little notification when we upload an episode. It's free, you know, it costs you nothing and it makes us feel nice. So yeah, thank you so much for listening, and anything that you can do in the service of letting other people know about this podcast that I assume you enjoy is very appreciated. I will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.